Hello, world. It's the Clue Phone, and it's for you. Welcome to the first edition of Dream World with Jim and Jay. My name is Jay, and we thought for the initial program, an interview with the leader and founder of the Church of the Meek would be in order. So without further ado, I would like to welcome the host of the show, Reverend Jim. Hi, Jim. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great today, Jay. How about yourself?
Doing good. I thought the people might want to know, what is your premise for Dream World?
Basically, what I'd like to communicate to the people is that every night we get an information stream about our circumstance, the lesson that we're currently working on, situations. It's information, it's education, it's an amazing event. And if you start paying attention to it, you'll discover that your life will turn around in a manner you didn't think possible.
So we're talking dreams here, basically.
Yeah, we're talking internal change brought about by dreams. And basically, the premise of the show is, and the premise of what I believe is, if everybody works on their internal affairs and gets their own set of circumstances together, that it will change the circumstances of the outer world. And it's very bizarre, but through the course of my life, I've learned if you do some inner work, it can change your outer circumstances.
So what makes you feel that you can speak knowledgeably on this subject?
Well, I started off as a loon. I was crazy as a goose. And it's through a long set of circumstances, but basically I was attached to fear in a manner that only someone brought up in the manner I was can be. And through the course of 30 years of keeping a dream journal and the things that happened to me and the events that my dreams foretold, I have learned that we get direct communication from our higher power every night, and all it takes to tap into that is learning the language of symbology.
When you say symbology, what do you mean?
We communicate, and this is kind of bizarre, but we have kind of a collective language as human beings, but we are dreaming in a language that Jung called symbology. And basically, there's meanings included in the content of your dreams that through the course of learning the language, your dreams will begin to make more sense to you, and you'll discover through symbols what's fixing to happen, what's going on with the lesson you're currently supposed to be learning. And it gives me a great feeling of comfort to know that I'm on a path that my dreams tell me about and that my dreams keep me in the middle of.
Can you give me some examples of common dreams and their meanings?
I'll tell you a story. Basically, I all the time I deal with people that are going, no, your dreams can't tell you the future and you're full of it. Through the course of my life, being crazy as a loon, I have a long and storied history with psychiatrists. And I've discovered through the course of my life that if I'm willing to go in for a tune-up, I'm probably okay. And if I'm going, I'm not crazy, then I'm probably in trouble. And at any rate, a lot of times the psychiatrist I was dealing with, it would turn into sessions for him over time because I have been keeping that dream journal a long time. And a lot of psychiatrists are very empirical people. And I'll give an example of a man that I was dealing with in Houston. Through the course of our sessions, I explained how I believe sometimes my dreams tell me the future. And he's going, no, that never happens. Well, a lot of people don't know it, but you can pray for a dream and you'll get it. So I said, I'll tell you what, doctor. I will ask for a dream that tells me the future. I'll get it. I'll tell you about it, and then I'll tell you what happened. And he said, well, okay. So that night, I prayed for a dream. And the dream I got is there's a friend of mine who was, I don't know how to put it, he's a Eastwoods beer drinking, let's go out drunk hunting kind of guy. And his nickname among the crowd we ran with was Bubba Beer Nut. Well, that night I dreamt that Bubba Beer Nut turned into, I don't know if you remember these childhood tops that you would wrap a string around. They're kind of heart-shaped, and you'd pull the string real fast, and it'd stand on its end and spin around and hop all over the place and that sort of thing. It's a childhood toy from my childhood, which probably lets everybody know that I'm a real old guy. But I dreamt that Bubba Beernut's head was on top of a red top like that. Somebody pulled the string and he started spinning around and turning beet red in the face, and he got going faster and faster and faster, and he exploded. And so I went into Dr. Miller and I said, well, doctor, here's the dream I had. I said, there's this guy I know named Bubba Beernut, and I dreamt he turned red, started spinning around, and exploded. And he said, okay. And then about 2 weeks later, this guy Bubba Beernut had just recently gone through a divorce, and he's one of these OCD guys that can't let go of the situation when it's over and that sort of thing. And he was hanging around spying on his ex-wife and saw that she was dating somebody else. And he got arrested and did 5 years time for pistol whipping the guy. So the red told me he was going to lose his temper. The spinning out of control told me that he was going to be out of control. And the explosion told me it was going to be a fit of anger that got him into trouble.
Did the doctor become a believer?
I know for a solid fact it shook him up, but he was still trying to be an empiricist over this stuff. And quite frankly, you can give somebody who's not going to believe all the information in the world, and it won't convert them. He was shaken up, but I don't think I could call him a believer. But it definitely made him start thinking about things.
You say you've been keeping a journal for 30 years. Do you ever have recurring dreams?
I probably have in the past had recurring dreams, but you'll find as you're working on your dreams, they're working on you. And I've definitely had chains of dreams where I didn't quite get the meaning of what was going on. And I guess I'll talk you through one of the chains that I went through. I told you I was crazy as a loon. Basically, I was a fear-based person from being beaten very severely as a child, and fear was all I ever knew. If I wasn't afraid, I'd go out and do something to become afraid. And this was all, believe me, I didn't set the conscious goal of going out, I'm going to do something really stupid so I can be afraid. It was all unconscious. I was trying to become afraid, and I didn't even know it. Jung calls his complex that I had the pueri eternus, the child forever, the Peter Pan syndrome, I won't grow up. And basically, that's what I had going on. I did not realize that the root of that is fear. But Peter Pan, the word pan is the root word of panic. And believe me, I had no idea what I was up to, and I had seemingly unrelated circumstances happen to me in spiraling cycles. And there were many events in my life that I had happen on a regular basis, and they say craziness is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. Well, the series of dreams I had, the first dream in the series was, I prayed for a dream. Dear Lord, I know something is up. Please let me know what's going on. And that night I had a dream about Rumpelstiltskin. I don't know if you recall the childhood myth or not, but basically the meaning of that dream, and it was very obvious at the time and done in a symbolic manner to the point that I knew exactly what it was saying, was you can't solve the problem until you know its name. So after I had the Rumpelstiltskin dream, I prayed for another dream, and I said, Dear God, please let me know its name. Well, then I dreamt that I'm in bed dreaming, and there's a scorpion crawling across the ceiling over my bed. And then the scorpion let go of the ceiling and fell down into the bed beside me. And I looked at it, and it was kind of a flesh-toned scorpion, and I rubbed my finger on the back of it. You know, I wouldn't do that with a real one, but I rubbed my finger on the back of it in the dream, and I said, you know, this feels almost like human skin. And the very second I said that in the dream, that scorpion turned into Pan, the god Pan, except he didn't have any hair. He had the goat legs and the horns, but he was bald as a cue ball. And we started choking each other and rolling around on the floor. And I went, well, that's real interesting. And that's when I started looking up the god Pan. Well, Jung's theory is that personality is a contagious disease. And we all have a quiver of personalities behind us that we shoot as arrows to the outside world. So, you know, everybody's got that little puppy voice they do. That's one of your personalities, you know. And there are two ways a personality can interact with a human being. One of them is you can choose a personality and use it for whatever end it is that you're trying to achieve as a quiver in your, or as an arrow in your quiver. But there are times when a personality has us. It's very similar to the Catholic demonic possession sort of idea. And the circumstance involved here is when you've got a personality that has you rather than you chose it, it chose you, then you start doing what is called unconscious behaviors. You're not even aware you do them. The unconscious is where your dreams come from, and we have a collective unconscious mind. And the collective unconscious mind has a direct link to divinity, and the things that we're getting on are trying, coming to us in dreams, the things that we're trying to accomplish. And it's trying to move us towards that place where our mind beats with the mind of God to the point that every religious question you've ever had is answered. So, at any rate, as I got more ideas about Pan, he became hairier. That told me that hair is ideas, and learning about what's going on is the symbol. And I learned a whole bunch about myself. I couldn't hang on to money. Well, there's a scene in Peter Pan, if you read the J. M. Barrie play, where Peter Pan, he loves to hang out with the Lost Boys. So Peter Pan and the Lost Boys get Captain Hook's treasure, and the very first thing they do with it is see how many times they can get it to skip on the ocean as they're tossing the coins out into the water. Well, there's the symbol for Peter Pan not being able to hang on to any money. Peter Pan is, if it isn't dangerous, it isn't fun. I learned that. I learned that Peter Pan can't hurt anybody, but he can scare the you-know-what out of anybody. That's his defense mechanism. He uses fear as a weapon. Well, I used fear as a weapon against my dad for 35 years before I knew I was doing it. It was a wonderful weapon. I could be completely guilt-free, and he couldn't do anything about it. No matter what he did, I was still scared of him. So, at any rate, once I realized that I was using it as a weapon, it sort of took away my ability to avoid the guilt. And at any rate, that chain of dreams that I'm talking about there is the start of my transformation from a person that was constantly afraid or seeking to become afraid into a confident human being that can get up and look like a nut in front of everybody listening to this radio show.
So do you think you can affect your dreams?
Well, I think it's sort of a cooperative effort. I think you interact with the other you. Everybody's at least two people. You know, schizophrenics are the people that don't know they've done something out of character. There's no interaction between the personalities. Normal human being go, well, I did something really weird back then. What was that, you know? Well, what's happening is everybody has, oh, like I said, a quiver of personalities that hop in and out, and lots of times they don't understand each other and aren't quite aware of, hey, I had him. What are you doing with him? But, yeah, you can affect your dreams. If you have a symbol you don't understand, there's a thing that Jung called an active imagination, where you work with the symbols of your dreams, and it's in a situation that was called the alchemical kitchen. And one of these shows, I'll take you all through an active imagination to discover your alchemical kitchen. But the basic gist of it is, while you're working on the symbols of your dreams, they're working on you. Dreams are indicative of your hardwiring in your head, your default positions of personality. And as you're working on a symbol from your dreams, it's working on you as well and changing the wiring in your head. So contemplating the symbols of your dreams is very important activity. They can call it daydreaming, but what it amounts to is it's letting what was sent to you work on you as you're working on it.
Do different personalities have different dreams?
Well, one of the major premises of the Church of the Meek is God shows a different face to every human being on the planet because everybody has a different direction they need to go to get to the middle. We're scattered about in this huge circle, if you want to do it as a is a X and Y graph type situation where we're all off center. If we weren't, we wouldn't be here. And if you ever get centered, you discover that you can check out if you want to. But the direction you need to go to become centered is different for every human being. And the face of God, therefore, needs to be different for every human being. And these people that cluster together into groups to believe the same thing are kind of defeating their individualized and personalized instruction.
Do you have a problem with organized religion?
Well, from the point of view that I'm trying to organize a religion, no. From the point of view that, first off, let me tell you what the position I hold with the Church of the Meek is called. The title of the office is False Prophet. Now, that's kind of weird in that, and I'm willing to fess right up to it, I'm a false prophet. My first message to the human race is quit listening to men about God. Now, there's kind of a little split in character going on here because my second message is listen to me. But the fact of the matter is, if everybody started paying attention to what they're being told by their dreams rather than the guy on the pulpit, they'd be herded in the direction they need to be. But my problem with organized religion, and I do have one, there's no doubt about it. First off, I don't think Jesus needs your $5. I think that's the guy up there on the pulpit that wants your $5. And my second problem is every man will lead you astray. That's just the way it is. We're flawed. I'll agree with the Baptists at that point. They say we're sinners. I think we're just wired funny. I don't think we start off with bad intentions. I think the road to hell is paved with good intentions, and everybody thinks they're a hero, and everybody's working the best they can with what they have to work with. But the problem is not recognizing what emotions are for and using emotions on the world. Dr. Spock was right. Emotions are not something to work on the world with. They're to show you when you're looking in the mirror. And when you're looking in the mirror, you're seeing something that you do. If you're emotional about something, you do it too. If you're emotional about a hero, you have some heroism in you that you refuse to recognize. And so you're taking a piece of yourself, projecting it onto your hero, and going, oh, I just think they're wonderful. Well, you're what's wonderful. And by the same token, if you get really pissed off at somebody in traffic and start screaming and yelling at them, you cut people off in traffic too. The reason we were told to love our enemy as ourself is what our enemy is doing for us is showing us ourself.
Yes, but when I cut people off in traffic, they deserve it.
Well, yeah, that's the whole problem, isn't it?
Let's drop back for a moment and discuss the alchemical kitchen.
Well, a lot of people don't know it, but what the alchemists were was an underground religion during the Middle Ages when the Spanish Inquisition had come see you if you started talking about anything that wasn't Catholic. And what the alchemists actually were in this whole process of turning lead into gold is symbolic. Everybody has little pieces in their personality and in their makeup where they've stashed a whole bunch of energy to protect it, and they've got complexes involved with it, and their psychic energy is tied up, and nobody ever better find this out, and stuff like that. Well, the alchemists, that's the lead. And then there is a process you go through in the alchemist tradition where you take that weighty thing that's holding you down and convert it into gold. So really what alchemy was an underground religion to keep the Spanish Inquisition and people of that ilk from discovering that you're pursuing your spirituality in a manner different from that was dictated by quote-unquote God.
Turning lead into gold, what's the process?
Okay, well, my main piece of lead, as I said earlier, was Pan. First off, I didn't even know when Pan had me because he had me most of the time, and I thought I was him and he was me. There's a process that Yin called differentiation, and that's you learn the traits of the personality that takes you over. So I learned about Pan. He can't hold on to money. He's moving all the time. He hangs out with the Lost Boys. He blends in. Pan can talk to doctors and sound like a doctor. He can talk to outlaws and sound like an outlaw. Pan's specialty is disappearing and becoming one with the crowd. He blends in. He can talk and sound like anybody. Yeah, that's one of the parts of the myth. Peter Pan and Captain Hook are the same person. He starts off as Peter Pan, and if you do it long enough, you're going to become an outlaw. Another thing about Peter Pan is he'll be involved in things like Captain Hook is that have to end. Like the symbol for that in the Peter Pan myth is the alligator with the clock in its belly. Now, the way this starts off is it'll start off as a dream. It'll start off, and you'll find that the children's stories and the movies of society are the dreams of us collectively. But the clock in the alligator's belly is letting you know that someday, whatever Peter Pan's up to has to end, and it can end when the clock quits ticking and he can't hear the alligator sneaking up on him anymore. Or it can end because he decides to reject a personality. But the way I turned that piece of lead into gold is I learned the traits of Peter Pan all the symbols of the myth, like the poison cake in it. Well, I was a drug addict for years. And that's poison cake. You think it's good for you, and it's killing you. It's a message to God that I don't feel good enough. I need to get a little boost. You haven't done right by me. It's partially a martyr thing, so it's going to have to end someday because martyrdom has to end. But at any rate, earlier, I'll tell you this Peter Pan thing. A buddy of mine that I used to be in nefarious activities, and I used to talk about this, how we're both lost boys and we're in the Peter Pan syndrome, and talked about the symbols of it. And he discussed that matter with his mom. And the part about that it has to end, there's, you know, the alligator with a clock in its belly. Well, his mom thought that was a great myth, and she actually put together an alligator with a clock in its belly and sent it to my buddy. Well, when it arrived, the clock was broken. It starts off as a dream or a children's story or a symbol, and if you don't pay attention to it at that point, then it becomes real in your life. Well, the very second I saw that alligator with a broken clock in its belly, I said to my bud, I can't work with you anymore. I got to get out of this because that's too strong a symbol showing up in our life with the actual alligator with the broken clock in its belly. And he ignored my advice and kept on doing what he was up to. And it wasn't 2 years before he had to do 5 years federal time for having $70,000, and he was charged with having 100 pounds of marijuana that he never saw.
I can think of a lot of famous and well-to-do people who have demons, and it appears that demons are not an impediment to success.
Well, I think that boils down to what is your criteria for success? There are a lot of people that have what you think is public success. All the time you'll hear of somebody you think has been just absolutely the bee's knees as far as outer world achievement is concerned, and they'll go home and commit suicide. Happiness isn't related to what the world thinks about success. Success is an internal event. Success is happiness. Success is enjoyment of life, and you can have all of the accolades and money in the world and still not be happy, and that's a fairly common event among successful people.
Previously, you said that Jesus doesn't want your $5, but the man on the pulpit does. Now, don't you need that?
Well, yeah, I'm the guy on the pulpit, and I'm definitely forking over the bread for the radio show and the website and power to the peaceful movement, and I don't mind forking over the bread. I appreciate every ounce of help I get, and yeah, I'd ask for some help from anybody listening that is inclined to give it. I'm not going to demand it, and I'm not going to tell you Jesus wants it. I will tell you what I'll do with the money, though. If you go to our website, that's at www.thechurchofthemeek.org, and please put the first V in, and look it up. You'll discover basically our tenets and premises. You'll find out how to get a hold of us. But what we do is we take, and I don't want any more, I'm not going to be one of these guys saying write us a big check, you know. I would like a nominating member and all it costs to become a nominating member is $10. All it costs to become a voting member is $25. If you want to send anything on top of that, just click the button a couple of more times. And anything over what you put into the endowment fund, which is that 10 or the 25, depending on the level you'd like to join at, what we do is we place all of that money into a savings account, any investment that's government insured, and we take the interest off that money, and the voting members decide every month where that money goes. And my basic premise on charity is if you're doing something and announcing that you're doing it and getting your picture in the paper and stuff like that, that's not charity. That's publicity. What I believe is charity is anonymous charity. And I hear all the time about people are depressed, you know. If you want to get over a depression, do something really, really nice for somebody else and don't even let them know you did it. You want to talk about charging your battery, it does it every time. You get rewarded for doing what you're supposed to be doing, and that's one of the finest rewards you can receive. But, yeah, I loved having the help, but right now I am personally committed to doing everything that's involved here, and I'm doing it personally. I won't lie to you. I have another job, and I use the money from that job to pay for getting this done because it's time something got done. It's time to disarm the Christian soldiers and get the whirling dervishes out of Islam.
In a perfect world, what would you like to see the church do?
Well, earlier you were talking about my problem with organized religion and stuff like that. Well, I think the church's job is to increase a level of spiritual awareness for everybody involved with it. And also, I think charitable events to people in dire circumstance is one of the duties of the church. I don't think accumulation of tax-free wealth is the duty of the church, but there's a lot of churches that do think that. Heck, there's probably a church where the head of the church could sell two rings and a painting and feed the world. But what would Jesus do? Well, I don't know. But I suspect he wouldn't be hoarding tax-free wealth.
You mentioned a voting member and a nominating member. Can you explain those?
If you go to our website, once again, www.thechurchoftheMeek.org, it's all explained there. But basically, if you give us a gift of $10, we put it in the endowment fund. If you give us a gift of $25, we put it in that interest-bearing endowment fund. A nominating member is someone who can suggest where the funds for that month go to be placed on the ballot for the voting members. And then the voting members receive a ballot on the 25th of each month, and we prorate the funds we're going to distribute that month on the basis of how many voting members voted for that particular project or charity.
Will there be a limit to the number of nominees in any given week?
There probably won't be a limit on nominees unless we really get outrageously successful with this. There is a limit of 10 charities or projects that we donate to each month. So the top 10 are the ones that receive the money. That's just for the purpose of it being enough money to matter. Right now, I'll be quite frank with you, we're quite new at this. The website's only been up about 2 weeks, but already we're getting hits from England and California, and we're incidentally operating out of Central Texas, the live music capital of the world. But we're becoming nationwide, and we've already got some hits from outside the country. But what I really want this to be is a power to peaceful movement all over the world. Our symbol, if you're familiar with the mute language, is the letter M. And that's two things, M for being meek. And also, if you hit somebody with your fist like that, you'll break your own thumb. And that's what hitting people is about, is breaking your own thumb.
So violence is always the wrong way to go.
Absolutely. One of the things that Jung said, and I've even seen a movie to this effect, is there aren't any external enemies. All of your enemies are internal. I'm going to give you what I think's going on with us in the Middle East. I had a friend, you were talking about organized church, I had a friend, and I was going to his church quite a bit. and contemplating membership, and one of his favorite phrases was, "The church is the body of Christ." And I said, "Well, we got to be very, very careful, because the body is the source of our sin." It absolutely is. When you think about the sins of men, it's sins to appease the body. It's sins over money, sins over sex, it's sins over prestige, it's sins over anything that feeds your ego. So when I'm listening to him, he was telling everybody that's in the membership indoctrination class, "Now, I don't ever say anything bad about other Christian sects, because you're insulting who they are and who they grew up with and telling them their parents had no idea what they're talking about. So I don't ever do that with other Christians." And then about 5 minutes later, he says, "However, I do fund," or he didn't say however, this was, the subject had been changed by then, "I fund a missionary to go over to the Islamic people and tell them the exact same thing I said I wouldn't say to a Christian. We got people over there, and quite frankly, I do not believe the message of Jesus was convert or go to hell. But we have missionaries overseas that are conveying that as the message of Christ. Convert or go to hell is as offensive to an Arab as their convert or I'll kill you is to us."
You said before that you had turned into Pan. How did you extricate him, and how did you turn that into gold?
Well, as I said, my lead and my personality was the fact that in any unconscious moment, Pan had me. Well, what's going on is the process that Jung called differentiation. You learn the traits of the personality that has you. You learn that if Pan uses drugs, that Pan is always traveling, that Pan sleeps on his back, that Pan can't hold on to any money, that Pan likes to eat poison cake, that Pan needs a Wendy in his life to make sure everything's fixed. And then as you learn the traits of the personality, you get to going with, "That wasn't me, that was him." And so you start distinguishing between things you choose to do and things that he made you do. By doing that, then you learn to recognize the moments that he's in charge and you're not. And as you start doing that, it's easier and easier to, you can't choose if he lives in you, you can just choose when he lives in you. I had an ex-wife. Being crazy, I have a long and storied history of ex-wives, too. I had an ex-wife, and she had a personality I called Leona, because she absolutely was the queen of mean. It was an irrational, "I want to hurt somebody and don't get in my way" kind of woman. Well, through the course of time, I started calling that personality of hers Leona. So I'd be discussing something with my wife and see that personality step into her, and I'd say, "Hello, Leona." And at first it started making her even madder, but eventually it got to the point where she started realizing that, hey, I've just shifted into another gear, something else has me. And over the course of time, there were times when I could say, "Hello, Leona," and it'd crack her up. And, you know, I still had to duck every now and then, you know, the frying pan was flying, but every now and then we'd be laughing in 3 minutes rather than having to deal with Leona. So that's the process of getting these evil beings out of yourself, is to learn to recognize when they have you, start calling them by a name different from yourself, and make them go away.
So who's the winner in this month's charity?
The top vote getter this month was Cal Farley Ranches up around Amarillo, and basically what those folks do is they take boys and girls. Boys naturally go to the Cal Farley Boys Ranch, and girls naturally go to the Girls Ranch. But they take people that don't have a chance any other way. They teach them trades. They educate them. They take them in, feed them. They take basically street kids and people that have grown up into circumstances that you wouldn't want to grow up in, that don't have a chance without them, and they give them a chance and educate them and put them on their feet and make absolutely wonderful people out of them.
I know in the past you've given just to individuals. Is that also an option?
Absolutely. Anytime you find a person, a place, a charity, anything that needs some help, You're absolutely free to nominate it as a nominating member. We do try and verify the stories. You know, if we get a story of an individual, we do go all out to figure out that it is a circumstance as described by the nominating member. But, yeah, we've definitely distributed, quite frankly, in a lot of circumstances to individuals rather than recognized charities.
So as a nominating member, can you nominate yourself?
Oh, you can nominate anybody, but definitely would raise some eyebrows over at the selection committee and as it's going onto the ballot if you did nominate yourself.
Well, you'd have to have a pretty good story anyway.
Yeah, it'd have to be a real good story in my book, you know. But at the same time, I can understand needing and asking for help. I've done it. So I don't hold it against anybody. It's just better be a good story is all I have to say.
What should people who have some dream symbols or question about dreams that they've been having, what should they do?
If you go to our website, once again, it's www.thechurchofthemeek.org, and write Reverend Jim there. You can write for info. Jay's address is deaconj@thechurchofthemeek.org if you'd like to send something to him. Mine is reverendjim@thechurchofthemeek.org if you want to ask me a question. Believe me, I'm a wise old man. And I've been in every circumstance twice between a rock and a hard place most of my life, and I definitely have some wise things to say and some good input for anybody that's having problems at the moment.
And until volume gets prohibitive, we will try to answer emails personally.
Absolutely. I want to absolutely have both of us remain accessible to whoever's interested in this thing. And if it ever gets to the point where we have to delegate, of course we're going to do it, but we'll let you know we're doing it. I'm not going to have somebody sign in my name to something they wrote.
Any pieces of the original cross for sale at the moment?
No, we're definitely not in that game. I'm not infallible. That's the Pope's job.
Let's get back to dreams. Should we be alarmed about nightmares?
The more powerful the emotion that comes to you in a dream, the more you should pay attention to it. I'm going to say that. If a dream is so powerful that it wakes you up, you definitely need to write it down and you definitely need to start working on the symbols. Dreams that are emotionally urgent are also urgent in your life. An example of what I'm talking about there is I knew this girl that fell madly in love with a guy that wasn't quite that fond of her. And she was driving hundreds of miles to see him. She was coming to see him when he was telling her, don't come. And she started having dreams that her car would lose control and she had hit things on the road and stuff like that. Well, that was a symbol telling her that she's out of control and she needs to start reining things in order to avoid circumstances. Well, it's been my experience that any problem you're working on that you need to start paying more attention to and correcting your behavior on starts off as a dream. And it starts off as a kind of a mild dream, and then it will graduate into a little bit more of a dream, and then it might turn into a nightmare. And if you keep not paying attention to what the symbols of the dream are, you'll start getting the symbols in your life. And if you don't pay attention to the symbols in your life, then all of a sudden you'll start getting accidents. Well, she kept having the dreams about the car being out of control, and then one day she's riding down the freeway, and her car went 360 degrees on the freeway, just spun for no reason, just driving along, and all of a sudden it does a 360 and then keeps right on going. And she's in constant contact with me. She said, well, it happened in real life, you know. She's one of the people I did I Ching readings and counseled for a while. And I said, well, you need to understand that you're out of control, and this emotional attachment that you have for this guy is not being returned. And not only that, it's my contention that emotions are not intended for the world anyway. They're intended to show you when you're looking in the mirror. And the guy that you think you're in love with is calm, cool, and collected. And I think that might be your own unconscious telling you to get more calm, more cool, and more collected.
Are you still in contact with her?
No, I'm not. She quit coming to see me. One of the things I've discovered through the course of my history in doing this thing is if you tell anybody something they're not ready to hear yet, they're going to get mad at you. By the same token, my dad said if nobody's getting mad at you, you're not doing anything.
You mentioned the I Ching.
The I Ching is a part of my religious library. I think it should be a part of everybody's religious library. I recommend the Wilhelm edition. I've had Christians get in my face and say I'm trying to be a seer and a foreteller of things and stuff like that. The I Ching doesn't tell you the actual events of the future, although it will answer questions about the future for you. It's more of a what should your attitude be as you confront the thing that is fixing to come at you in the future. The premise of the I Ching is the only constant in our lives is change. So all you can count on is things are going to change. That's it in a nutshell. We live in the eternal now, and I guarantee you everything you think is real and solid and concrete is transitionary. Everything you think is spiritual and dreamlike is completely real. It's one of this. It's like I was saying earlier, there is just a real deal about if you change what's inside, you change what's outside. If you try and work on what's outside, you'll keep doing the same thing over and over and over again, trying to get to where you think you want to be when the work should be internal. So, yeah, I use the I Ching. It relies on a principle that Jung calls synchronicity. Maybe you've heard the title in like a Sting album.
Sting.
But incidentally, Sting is obviously into Jung if you start looking at some of the things he says and some of the things that are in the title of his albums and some of the song titles and things like that. He's definitely a Jungian, whether he'll tell you that or not. But that's one of the beautiful things about symbology is you can't get away from it. You know, it's like trying to tell what color a house is painted when you're inside it. You know, symbols are going to be there. They're always going to be there. I regularly foretell future events off of the symbols that I see around them. For example, I was almost frantic. It was before I discovered it's very unlikely you're going to be able to change the future, even though you know what it's going to be. But I knew when the first space shuttle blew that it was going to. And the way I knew that was by several symbols I saw. I saw a step leading up to the shuttle. It had icicles hanging off of it, and I knew immediately what that was. Another thing that somebody can do that's very, very dangerous is there are synchronistic events, seemingly unrelated events, but there are huge cogs on different levels of the universe that turn in synchronicity with each other. And just for example, try very, very hard not to make yourself a symbol to young people. Because if you do make yourself a symbol to young people, when young people go through puberty, that is the first death of personality they experience. And if you have yourself set up as a symbol to a collective group of young people, you're placing yourself in pretty dire circumstances. Because when people go through that change of personality, there is a sacrifice that goes on. And somebody's going to be the symbol for that group of people, and I knew that the teacher that was on that Friday, Christy McAuliffe, was setting herself up to be a symbol by having all the grade school kids watching it. And so I absolutely get intuitions off of symbols, and sometimes they're related to me, and sometimes they're related to the world. But one of the things that I've heard, and I firmly believe it, is that childhood fairy tales create these personalities, and that movies are the dreams of society. We have a individual set of dreams, and we have a collective set of dreams. And right now the dream I'm working on is the Wizard of Oz as far as our society is concerned. Don't pay any attention to the man behind the curtain. You know, the man behind the curtain is Sin is probably the biggest bozo in my experience to represent the wizard. And we need to get to the point where we recognize the symbols of what's going on and quit doing stupid things. You know, politically, everybody I talk to is a libertarian. But nobody will vote Libertarian, because if I vote Libertarian, the Republican will get in. If I vote Libertarian, the Democrat will get in. Well, our collective insanity is that we keep subscribing to this two-party system. Well, the reason they call it a system is it's a way to guarantee nothing happens. The Republicrats are going to keep us right where we are because they can vote themselves a raise as they head on vacation every year, and they're every one of them being funded in the campaign donation department by the people who make the bullets.
Well, I noticed that some of the outside campaigns just can't get any press.
Well, absolutely. Anybody with an original idea. You see, this whole thing, there are interlocking directorates of the entertainment industry, of all the manufacturing industry. You'll find one guy sitting on five boards of directors, you know. So the guy who's making missiles for Raytheon is also on the board of Exxon and on the board of entertainment company. And so they have a vested interest in making sure things remain the same. We got CEOs making $25 million bonuses at the same time they're laying off the rank and file of the company. You know, if they cut his bonus in half, it could have kept all the people they laid off.
Does the church support any individual candidates?
Well, you always accuse other people of what you're up to, and right now, I'll be quite frank with you. Personally, I'm for Barack Obama because I think he's the most likely choice to get some peace going on around here. And I believe on a national level and on a personal level, violence is always the wrong course of action. It absolutely is always the wrong course of action. The last justifiable war mankind will be in was World War II. Because it was obviously evil, it was obviously taking place in the real world, people were obviously unjustifiably being killed and exterminated, and it was a justifiable war. I think it may be the last one. I believe there is no political or religious cause that demands the life of a human being.
So what's that beeping we keep hearing on occasion?
I think that's my wife doing the laundry, just for you folks at home so you know what's up to. With this right now, I have a recording studio in my home, and we're over here recording this program right now in my house. Well, my wife's doing laundry, so that beep, beep, beep you hear periodically is the door opening and shutting to our laundry room.
Well, at least you'll have some clean laundry.
Exactly. Thank you so much, Lynn Nail.
So this is a pretty homegrown movement.
Oh, well, absolutely. I can't afford much at the time, so be sure and send me the $5 if you think you could give us a hand over here. We're definitely sitting around the house, and it ain't soundproof, and it's cheap recording equipment, in case you can't tell by the echoes and the sound on it. But we're doing the best we can, like everybody else, with what we've got to work with.
Where do you envision this thing going?
Well, at the rate things are happening for me, you know, I've discovered through the course of time that if you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, all the stuff will lay down in front of you and act like you're headed the right direction. I first had the dream that told me to start the Church of the Meek in 1983, and I ignored it for 25 years, and quite frankly, I've been fighting the fur being the wrong way the whole time. And the very second I decided I've got to go ahead and do it, I'm getting kind of old, and if I'm going to do it, it's time to do it now. Well, the very second I decided to do it, I got a job where I can work on it at work, and they're paying me to do it. I got making more money with less pressure than any other position I've held in my life. I designed our website at night at work when I was there. Everything's just going smooth as ice, and we're getting members right and left off the website. And there are so many people that are so sick of the belligerence of the world. And I think one of them is God. I think we're having tsunamis and earthquakes and hurricanes and tornadoes like never before. And I think God's pissed at us. I really believe it, because we create everything that happens to us collectively or individually. And one of the things that most has me worried right now is there's a whole field of Christian soldiers and a whole field of people on the Muslim side of things that have been brought up to believe that we're heading for Armageddon. And as long as they believe it, it's going to happen. as long as they're marching that way and the Christian soldiers are all armed and the Muslims are all worked up with convert or die infidel slogans going on, then we're going to be in trouble. And you'll discover this. Oprah's done a big thing on it, the book called The Secret. You get what you think about. If you worry about something all the time, rest assured it's going to happen. If you think things are going to be great, rest assured it'll happen. Well, right now we got a whole bunch of people in this world that think we're headed for the big end-of-time fight, and it's time to change enough people's mind to make the end-of-time fight not happen.
Self-fulfilling prophecy, then.
We're all doing it all the time. That's just the way it is. If you're thinking about it, you're creating it.
What can we do to best affect our field of influence?
One of the things that you'll discover is our field of influence is over us. You're not going to be able to change another person on the planet. You're not going to be able to police the ethics of another person on the planet. You're not going to be able to get another person on the planet any closer to God. You got to move yourself. You're the only person you can move. You'll find at the Church of the Meek, we encourage doubt, unlike other religions. We think that the leap of faith should be as short as possible. We think that churches that proselytize and try and convert you to what they think need your vote, because they don't really know if they believe it or not, so they need everybody to comply in order to make sure it's true. So we're not ever going to knock on your door. I have more of a Zen master kind of idea about this thing. You can knock on ours if you want to. It'll always be open for you. But one of the first things you discover when you reach that point of consciousness that I talked about, where all of your answers are given to you by the power that is God doesn't care whether we get it or not. If we want it, he'll give it to us. But his plan's going to be done whether we get it or not. And the idea that God sits around waiting for our worship and accolades is entirely incorrect. God's on his course, and we're all going to comply eventually. And that's just the way it is. God doesn't care, but if you care, then knock on the door and see what happens. The message was, ask and you will receive. But if you don't ask, he won't give you anything, and he won't care that you didn't ask.
So the church is not a brick-and-mortar type institution.
We probably are the first and only church that exists almost entirely on the Internet. There are a group of people that meet here with me in Austin, Texas, and we talk about dreams and dream symbology and that sort of thing. But this is an Internet church, and honestly, a big endowment and building fund to me are interfering with what all the great religious leaders told us to do, and that's take care of our brothers. So if you go out and spend $200 million on your cathedral, that's $200 million that isn't feeding people in Ethiopia.
Well, I think this has been a pretty good introduction to the church. I've enjoyed talking with you today. I look forward to our meeting next time, next week.
Well, thank you so much, Jay. I sure appreciate you being my Ed McMahon on this thing. And I just want to remind everybody out there, if you think that world peace, is a worthy goal, all it has to do with is convincing one person at a time to put down the gun and quit making the fist. And let's be gentle towards each other, and let's work on ourselves rather than try and work on the world. And if we work on ourselves and we're successful at it, the world is going to take care of itself.
Well, that's about all the time we have for this week. If you would like to testify, ask questions, or provide feedback, our contact information is www.thechurchofthemeek.org, or snail mail us at Church of the Meek, P.O. Box 248, Driftwood, Texas 78619. So for Reverend Jim and myself, have a good life.
Thanks a bunch, Jay. We'll talk to you next week.